Hello, I'm Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. We're here to make psychology understandable, interesting, a little intriguing, and give you a little more knowledge on what's going on in the world. Today, we are going to be talking about industrial organizational psychology. It is a newer field within the realm of psychology. And my guest this evening is Dr. Marlon Sukal, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about him. He is the program director and department chair of the Industrial Organizational Business Psychology and Organizational Leadership Departments for the Chicago School of Professional Psychology Online. Prior to this, he was the consulting director for Concise Consulting Center at the Chicago School. Dr. Sukal has significant experience in action research methodologies, strategic planning, talent selection and management, organizational leadership, and data analysis strategies. He is also an advocate of innovative software for educational and career advances. His research interests and expertise include work-life balance, career anchors, diversity management, telecommuting work arrangements, virtual team dynamics, person-organization fit, work compensation models, minority entrepreneurship, artificial neural networks, and leadership and social competencies. He has also published articles in the American Psychology Association online database and the Organization Management Journal, and just completed a book chapter within Entrepreneurial Women, New Management and Leadership Models, set to be soon in print soon. Welcome, Dr. Sukal. How are you?
Hello, Julianne. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here with us. This is an interesting field. Like I said, this is a newer model of psychology that a lot of people don't know about. So could you tell us a little bit about what industrial organizational psychology is?
Absolutely. Happy to do so. Basically, industrial organizational psychology is the scientific study of employees within organizations, how they work, looking at particular performance issues, levels of satisfaction, safety, health and well-being, work-life balance. Anything that improves an employee within an organization, we look at as industrial organizational psychology.
So how many industries or how many large corporations incorporate IO psychologists?
Well, if you think about it, Julianne, every organization, every corporation, they have a human resources department. Within that human resources department, they use specific tools to be able to hire the right people, to be able to train their employees, to be able to promote their employees, pay their employees well. And consequently, all of those tools that are being used within organizations, a lot of them are being created by industrial organizational psychologists. So we are not HR per se, but we work on the back end, so to speak, in terms of creating all of those tools that HR uses and, more importantly, evaluating whether they're effective or not.
I would imagine nowadays that is really important because the workforce retention is not what it used to be. A lot of people are only hanging on to a job for maybe 5 years, the turnover's got to be pretty high. And I would imagine that an IO psychologist can come in and say, hey, maybe you should be looking at these practices and tightening up on certain issues so that you can keep, you know, your really good employees.
Absolutely, and you said it best. Employees are not staying around as long as they used to. Thinking about generational gaps and what's going on currently in the war for talent, and I'm sure you've heard that term before, especially we have a couple of issues going on. First of all, the newer generations tend to move around quite a lot more than the older generations. Not to mention baby boomers are retiring, which means a lot of talent is walking out the door. And as talent management folks, we need to be able to bring in the right talent, to hire the right people, to be able to fill those gaps. Easier said than done, because quite frankly, there aren't enough of new employees to be able to fill the old ones that will be retiring pretty soon. So the war on talent is quite huge, and what we're seeing is a spike in terms of organizations doing mass recruiting and recruiting very aggressively and paying a lot higher than what a normal position would entail. And because of that, this war on talent is going to go on and continue to go on for quite some time. Again, that leads to jobs in terms of industrial organizational psychologists and being able to recruit the right people for the right job. So personal organization fit will be critically important.
Yes, I agree with that. And then we have to incorporate also globalization that's going on. And with technology coming into the field and education being much different overseas than it is here, it can be quite messy trying to find the like you said, the right fit for the organization.
Absolutely, and you mentioned technology, and technology is changing everything, including education. I work for an online institution. And what we're seeing is quite a bit of international students coming into our programs, mainly because of the accessibility and the flexibility of it all, not to mention folks going back into education or getting their higher degrees with the ability to be more flexible in terms of education. So education is changing as we see it, and even traditional, quote-unquote, brick-and-mortar schools are now having online schools along with their traditional classroom setting.
Yeah, I think most schools are doing that. I know my undergrad and my graduate programs were both, especially undergrad program. I had like what was called a blended course, and I did a little too much computer time, but I'm kind of a, you know, one-on-one person. I love to be in the classroom. But anyways, can you tell us a little bit about what a typical day of an industrial organizational psychologist would look like?
That's a good question, and it could vary depending on what the industrial organizational psychologist is doing. Quite frankly, the field is broad in such a way that you could get into various aspects of what an IO psychologist will do on any given day. They could be doing specifically training, employee selection, talent management, large scale org change, data analysis. And on top of that, they could be working for different industries, whether in education or working for a consulting firm or possibly their own consulting boutique. So it would vary depending on what they're doing. Generally, and again from my experience, if you're working as a consulting or in a consulting capacity or working as a consultant, you tend to do quite a bit of traveling. You meet face-to-face with clients, and you perform usually in groups to fulfill some sort of project for a client. And that could be very exciting. At the same time, it can be quite challenging in terms of travel and so on and so forth. On the other hand, you may be involved in education, in which case you would be teaching, doing research, working with students, etc. It really depends on your on what you're doing currently and how you are in the field, in what industry.
Right. And how much of an IO psychologist is psychology and how much of it is business?
Oh, great question. I see it as almost a 50-50 split within our programs in terms of the class content and coursework that we give to our students. Essentially, half of it entails some sort of consulting, business and finance, behavioral economics. So those would be sort of the classes that you would take. On the other hand, you will take social psychology, you will take general psychology type classes where we're looking at behavioral issues, things of that sort. So you get a nice mix of business and psychology, and consequently, the field of IO psychology is also called business psychology. So it entails both sides, and we find that we tend to get two types of students, one that come from more of a psychological background. In other words, they've taken clinical psychology as their undergrad, and we also get business students who have studied business in their undergrad and also want to come into the course. It's a nice mix of both business and psychology.
It does sound like that, and it sounds like if you're kind of a person that's right brain, left brain, and you can't, you know, you don't want to compromise either side, you want to get into, you know, helping people solve their problems, but yet do it from a practical manner, that this would probably be a really good field for you to go into.
Absolutely, especially if you think about where we spend most of our time as adults. We spend most of our time at work, and if we're thinking about improving the quality of people's lives within an organization, at the same time making the organization successful, we're looking at both the people element as well as the business element and merging those two. That's where industrial organizational psychology fit in, to be able to merge those. Again, easier said than done, but that's what we're trained to do as professionals, to be able to help people within an organization by applying these psychological principles.
Yeah, and it is important to keep people as happy as possible at work, especially for the, you know, more of a stress load that is put onto employees nowadays because of having fewer employees to do more of a workload.
Yes, and one of the main constructs that we look at is burnout, and that also leads to other things such as depression and turnover, et cetera. And so we want to make sure we as employers and as psychologists and consultants, we want to make sure that we control for these issues. And again, we talk about talent and managing that talent, and that's why we're seeing within our industry a lot of jobs in regards to talent management, being able to keep our employees happy, healthy, keep them within the organization, because quite frankly, if they leave, they're going to go to one of our competitors and take their talent with them.
Yeah, maybe. And the whole thing is nowadays, too, there's not that guarantee if you leave one job that you're not too happy with, that there's going to be another one waiting for you.
Exactly.
It's exactly. Not that guaranteed of the grass is greener on the other side right now.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's another thing to take into consideration when working with employees, is that a lot of employees are probably staying right now because of that fear of not finding another job as quickly as they used to. So you have to deal with the unhappy employee and holding grudges and who knows what's, you know, like you were talking about burnout and, you know, kind of repressing, you know, maybe some frustration and anger issues at work, and who knows how it's going to end up coming out.
Exactly. And organizations are having more of those assisted plans within the organization as well. So in other words, hiring their own psychologists to work within the company. And our psychologists work within various companies such as Google, Disney, Warner Brothers, Starbucks, to help folks within these organizations live within the organization's happier and healthier lives. The other aspect of that, too, is the way we work. And we're seeing a lot of work now that is virtual, the use of flex time, use of telework. And again, that's changing the dynamic of the way we work. And that in itself brings in all these other psychological and work-related issues that we need to deal with.
And probably new ones, too, especially with the flex programs and working at home. So I've known a few people that have gone in and, you know, had office jobs. I'd go in one day a week just to check in with the, you know, with the team and come back and then work at home for the rest of the week. For some people that works. For some people it's too much isolation time. So it's fascinating. It is creating new opportunities and new issues along with it. So I wanted to ask you had mentioned before behavioral economics. Can you explain what that is?
So behavioral economics is a field that has sort of emerged in the last 10 years, where we're looking at behavioral dynamics and how that impacts various aspects of an organization. So if we're thinking about behaviorally how people perform within an organization, and how consequently That could be related to other aspects within the organization, such as behavioral finance. I'm sure you've heard of that one as well. But it's basically studying the social, cognitive, and emotional factors that go into making some sort of decision-making, some sort of economic decision, which will impact other aspects of the business, essentially the bottom line. And so we have to think about all of those things from a behavioral standpoint, and again, tying in the factors that affect individuals within that organization. I hope that sort of made sense in regards to what behavioral economics is. But you're hearing that term being tossed around quite a lot. In fact, we are starting a master's degree in behavioral economics at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Yeah. We're really excited to be launching that pretty soon.
That's very nice. That's, I know. I noticed that the school is definitely having more divisions within psychology, which is fascinating, because I was at graduation on Friday morning, and there were some of the programs that only one or two people graduated from that specific division of whatever degree that they went for. It was pretty fascinating to see. So it's great that the, you know, psychology is blossoming out the way it is and going into so many different areas of our lives, because I think it's just so important that people understand a little bit more about what they're dealing with, the complex issues that we face nowadays. Everything's a little more complicated.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to reach out to the listeners, too. If you would like to join this conversation, our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. So, Dr. Sokol, what are some of the current trends in industrial organizational psychology?
Well, there are quite a few trends, specifically the larger ones and the ones we see within printed material and on the news, internet, et cetera. I'll talk about briefly. The first one is data, and the fact is there's so much data out there now. There was an astonishing statistic that was put out by IBM in 2012 that said basically every day we create 2.5 quintillion bytes of data. So much so that 90% of all data has been created in the last 2 years alone.
Wow.
And if you think about that, that's an astonishing amount of data because of social media, because of the internet, because of technology. And because of that, we're a data-driven society. If you look at the newspapers, if you look at the news, if you look at any sort of material on the internet, everything is driven by numbers. And consequently, you're finding a lot of words as well, where nowadays, and we're seeing a lot of jobs popping up in regards to being a data analyst, being a business analyst, looking at data, and a lot of job descriptions are asking, how do you handle data? Do you look at data within a particular medium, and do you make decisions based on that? And so as industrial organizational psychologists, what we teach within our programs is the handling of data. We have a data management class, we have a qualitative data class, quantitative data class, and based on that, we're teaching our students how to handle this data to, again, use it within organizations to make sound business decisions. It could also be used in other capacities, such as within academia or in a marketing standpoint, as in consumer psychology. So there are other ways you could use the data that's out there and readily available. Some other trends and exciting ones. Recently, there was a grant that was given out by NASA to a few IO psychologists, industrial organizational psychologists at the University of Central Florida, specifically Dr. Eduardo Salas and his partners. And essentially they were brought in and given this grant to help with the training of astronauts that will be going in the mission to Mars in 2030. And the reason for that is they had to look at all these various dynamics in regards to looking at astronauts to see how they blend together. They'll be essentially a high-performing team that needs to gel, needs to be able to perform. At the same time, they need to get along. They need to be around each other. There will be in the size of a small kitchen in this journey for some time. And so all of these cultural issues, gender issues, issues of personality will come into play. And in terms of being able to bring in the right people, train them properly, and be able to evaluate how they're doing, they've called in these industrial organizational psychologists to do that type of work, which is really exciting, especially since it's putting industrial organizational psychology on the map, if you will. And so that's another trend we're seeing. The last major trend is globalization, and the fact is we're becoming more of a diverse global place where we as individuals need to work with other people from various backgrounds. And so there has always been cultural differences, but now we're working in proximity, we're working virtually. How do we all work together so we could get the job done? And how do we put differences aside in terms of ethnicity, in terms of our own values, to be able to work and produce something? And so as industrial organizational psychologists, we study a lot of those cultural issues, gender issues, so on and so forth, to be able to do work.
Okay, Dr. Sekal, I would like to come back to the globalization aspect of industrial organizational psychology after we take our commercial break, okay?
Sure, absolutely.
The Chicago School of Professional Psychology offers numerous psychology, behavioral, and health-related science graduate degrees at three campuses: Los Angeles, California, including branches in Westwood and Irvine, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., and online. The Chicago School prepares students to meet the ever-changing mental health needs of society through classroom experience and real-world training. The Chicago School Counseling Centers in Irvine and Westwood provide caring, confidential, and affordable psychological services to individuals and their families. For more information, visit thechicagoschool.edu.
And thank you to the Chicago School for sponsoring Psych 101. So, Dr. Sekal, what is one of the biggest psychological challenges of globalization?
So, prior to the commercial, I talked about cultural sensitivity, and organizations are expanding beyond their borders, so to speak, and moving into the global framework. And within that comes differences in terms of culture, in terms of the way we do work, in terms of cultural dimensions, according to Hofstadter's cultural dimensions, who is a famous cultural scientist that did work in many different organizations across the globe, and essentially came up with his dimensions in regards to differences in the way different cultures view different things. For instance, one of those issues would be the way we work within ourselves. Do we tend to work individually, or do we tend to work better within a group? And what he found in those studies is that different countries handle that way of work in different ways. For instance, the United States, we tend to work very individually. We tend to do our work within ourselves. We tend to promote ourselves quite a bit, as opposed to Japan, where they tend to work in groups. They tend to cherish group work, and they are quite effective in doing that without really promoting individuality. So those sorts of nuances has to be taken into account. For instance, if a United States citizen is going over to Japan to work in Japan, because they work quite differently, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge. I have a quasi-brother-in-law who works for Guthy Rinker, and he is going over to Japan quite a bit now and having to work within their collective teams and having to change his whole American framework in his mind to you know, deal effectively with people business-wise. So
yes.
It's been some interesting stories coming back from Japan.
Oh, certainly. My brother, he works for Chevron, and he had to go through expatriate training, mainly because he was traveling quite a bit, and he, one of the sites he had to go to was Venezuela and South America. And it's quite a, different in regards to the way they handle certain things, such as time. And time for us is, we have a meeting at 9 o'clock, everyone shows up to the meetings promptly at 9 o'clock, and we end the meeting at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
In Latin America and many of the countries in that area, they do not handle time the same way. Time to them is very different. And so, therefore, it's okay to be a little bit late. It's okay to end a meeting a little bit late. And so he had to get used to those sorts of cultural issues that we tend to see within the United States versus somewhere else. And many of those instances exist. And so that's why expatriate training is so important. It's also important if you have family. It's been shown that the wives of spouses, men who are traveling abroad, the wives tend to become very depressed and lonely and isolated when they go into these different countries. And so that psychological discipline from a family standpoint also affects and the cohesive unit of a family. And so those kinds of things need to be taken into account as well.
So do IO psychologists also incorporate the family issues like that?
Oh, sure. One of our major constructs and ways in which we do work is to look at the family dynamic. And we look at work-family conflict quite a bit. In other words, how family can impact the way we do work and how work can impact the way we handle our family and the way we, if there are any conflicting issues. So we tend to study that in the broad realm of work-life balance, which quite, happened to be my dissertation, so I know the area quite well. But tons and tons of research on work-life balance and how that whole dynamic comes into play, and how do we as working individuals, as well as having other aspects of our life, how they all sort of coincide with each other, again, to create this sort of dynamic and the individual as having multiple hats, and how they all sort of balance that out. And as we all know, that is quite challenging, to say the least.
And do you think that that work-life balance is getting better or worse overall?
Well, with the use of technology and the way we can do work nowadays, especially with more and more companies allowing their workers to work remotely, to have more flexibility in their work, you're actually seeing more work-family conflict. You're actually seeing the lines, the blurred lines between work and family domains overlapping a lot more. So in other words, working at home, you have your kids disturbing you possibly, or your wife walking into the door, or your husband walking into the door. You have your pets bothering you. It may affect that relationship. It also affects how you, as a family person, can do work. So in other words, if you're at home and you're called to do certain things in the household and you have some work to do, that may impact your performance at your job if you're working remotely. So you're starting to see those domains become quite overlapping, which can impact one or the other.
Yeah, and there's also the issue, too, of we're plugged in 24/7 now. And, you know, some people have a hard time turning off their cell phones. You see more people that are texting when they should be out to dinner and enjoying themselves and being in the moment. And there, you know, it seems that people's attention spans are spread out all over the place because of technology, you know, and you know, I love technology for certain things, but, you know, as for the work-life balance, I think it's really important to, you know, be able to relate to the person that's next to you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned that, because I just had a family vacation down to Cabo in Mexico, and I took my laptop and my cell phone and my iPad with me, and I was on the beach in Cabo, and I had my laptop open and I was checking emails. And you know, this this man walked by and he said, "You should not be working in Cabo. It's a sin to be working in Cabo. Put your laptop away."
Words of wisdom.
Exactly. And he was actually right, first off. And I felt so ashamed because he was right. And I realized I need to be spending time with my family. And for the rest of the vacation, I didn't open my laptop. And there really was a sense of this addiction to my laptop and being able to check emails and things of that sort. And, you know, it's almost I went into withdrawal. And that's pretty scary if you think about that for a second. Being able to shut every computer down, every iPad down, cell phone, and not respond to any of it.
Yes. In general, I mean, how does an IO psychologist deal with that when the company is demanding so much of their employees and the employees need to have that vacation time, shut down the laptops on the beach?
Yeah. That's great question. And employees are wising up to that fact. In other words, there's a certain workload that employers have to respect from their employees. In other words, they cannot be plugged in all the time and respond to emails all the time and handle issues all the time. Quite frankly, that could lead to other legal issues. So in other words, if you require your employees to always check their email or always stay plugged in or respond to an email within, I don't know, 5 hours, think about the workload that would entail. So generally, if we're saying 40 hours of work, but meanwhile we're having our employees, due to checking email and handling issues and things like that, they end up working 80 hours. And the employees can show that could lead to other issues in terms of not paying your employees over 40 hours, things of that sort. So I think employers are wising up to the fact that their employees need to work the required hours that they're contracted to work for, and after that, then they should be unplugged.
Yes, that's very idyllic. Hopefully that happens. So if a person is interested in getting into the industrial organizational psychology field, what would you recommend?
So I'd recommend certainly the APA website, and within the APA you have two divisions. You have the Society for Consulting Psychologists, which is Division 13, and Division 14 of the APA website, and again, this is apa.org, you could find the Society for Industrial Organizational Psychology webpage, which is SIOP.org, or you could go directly to it without going through the APA website. But essentially on the PSYOP website, you will find everything from what an IO psychologist does to the type of work they do, how much money they make. There's a job net on there where you can see the types of jobs they're doing with actual jobs from companies. In other words, companies actually post their jobs on there. So quite a bit of activity on that website. It's very well known within the industrial organizational psychology field. I recommend it to all of my students. There's also a national conference that we have every year. The next national conference will be in Hawaii early next year, where industrial organizational psychology folks, HR folks, people from various organizations doing that type of work all meet to basically network. It really is a wonderful place to meet your colleagues and to see what the latest research is, see what the latest happenings are within organizations, and to know all about the world of industrial organizational psychology. So that would be one of the websites I highly recommend.
And can you repeat that website?
Sure, it's www.siop.org.
Okay, with all of your teaching experience, what type of student, what type of personality would fit really well into this kind of a psychology field?
So industrial organizational psychology, because we're a newly we're a growing discipline within psychology. We're one of the newest, yet we're making broad, sweeping leaps and bounds because we're growing so quickly. In fact, students going into programs are getting jobs even before they graduate, mainly because of the need for it within organizations. But there are certain characteristics that I see within my students that I've come to notice right away. For one thing, our students tend to be very outgoing. They tend to want to network quite a bit. They like to meet each other. Some of them are rambunctious, and I joke around about that quite a bit. But they have that personality to be able to go out there and network and meet people, because quite frankly, that really is a part of the job. We're all about networking, which is why these annual conferences that we have and various conferences, we go there to meet other industrial organizational psychologists. We go there to meet other professionals. We go there to possibly get our next job or our next project. It really is about networking to help getting to consulting, or whether we want to get into teaching or other aspects. We tend to be very outgoing in our personality. So that's one of the characteristics I see. We also are very savvy when it comes to handling data. Our students are very well grounded in terms of statistics, in terms of qualitative methods, and being able to use software to be able to handle that type of data. So the recent statistics I gave you by IBM has really cornered the market in terms of the analysis of data, and we teach our students how to use that software. So those are two of the characteristics that I see our students having while they're in the program and learning from the program.
It sounds like a kind of assertive maverick types. Does that sound right?
That certainly sounds right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, you definitely need to have be able to promote yourself to be doing Iowa Psych, from what it sounds like.
Absolutely. Marketing yourself is key, and how you build your skill set where you can differentiate yourself from your competitors, as in the job market, which is so competitive nowadays. That's what we teach our students, how to market yourself and learn as much as you can from the program, so that way you have a beautifully built and polished resume that you could present to potential employers.
That sounds like a gift right there. A lot of people, especially the way that we're doing job hunting nowadays, it's what percentage of it is just all on the internet? That's it. I mean, you know, send us your resume. We don't want to see you. Don't call us. We just want to see what you're like on paper. So, yeah, having a stellar resume is, you have to have it nowadays.
Absolutely, and it really has to be tailored to the job you're going after. So you have to have those keywords within it, because nowadays resumes are screened just from the use of software. So in other words, they type in keywords that will screen the resumes, kind of like a find and search. And if your resume does not have those keywords pertaining to the actual job, you're not going to be selected for that job. It's just going to be kicked out. So just keep that in mind when you're submitting a resume. Seldom do you ever use a generic one. You have to tailor it to that job.
So it sounds like, well, do you teach that also within the program too? Is, you know, proper resume writing, the keywords to use, what tricks of the trade are out there to get a job?
Yeah, the Chicago School is very well known for the way they prepare the students, and we have several workshops in that regard in terms of resume building, resume writing. We also have a marketing yourself workshop where we teach you how to really market yourself. So it's not only about your resume, it's also about how do you get your resume out there, how do you do a 30-second elevator speech, getting a business card, things of that sort. Anything you need to do to sell yourself in terms of your skills, in terms of your knowledge, intrinsic abilities that you have, you want to advertise yourself. You have to think about yourself as a brand. And so that's what we teach our students within the university, to be able to do that. Because quite frankly, that's how we measure success. We measure success by students getting out there, going into organizations, and doing some great work. And what we find is those students come back and give back to the university, and that's what we're so proud of.
Yes, definitely. And going out and making a difference, right?
Absolutely. And thinking about how much they impact the lives of people within work, within organizations. And we need more industrial organizational psychologists to do that. And so we continue to promote our programs to be able to train our students coming in and consequently going out and doing that type of work.
Challenging, definitely. Why would a person pick industrial organizational psychology over other degrees, such as an MBA or a clinical psychology?
Great question. And MBAs, and I have an MBA, so I could certainly talk about an MBA versus a master's in industrial organizational psychology. An MBA is a broader, more genetic degree. You take a lot of courses, various courses in various areas of business, such as marketing, business, finance, economics. In my MBA, I ended up taking an organizational development course, which led me into industrial organizational psychology. You take business statistics, etc. So it's sort of a buffet of different courses that you take, and consequently you could specialize in any one of those courses if you decide to get into a particular work market. On the other hand, the master's in industrial organizational psychology is very practical in that we teach specific classes related to organizations that you may want to get into, such as training and development, such as employee selection, performance appraisal systems, data analysis. So it's very specific to the organization. So you could almost think of it as a niche within an organization, essentially helping HR or creating HR tools where you could get into. So it makes your degree a lot more poignant to an employer, especially if they're looking for that particular skill set. An MBA is much, much too broad to be able to do that.
And how many of your students come in with a bachelor's in business?
Many of them do, actually. I would say about 40 to 50% of them have some sort of business background. And the rest of them have some sort of psychology background, whether as a major or minor in undergrad. And so... And some of them have both. Some of them have some business background. Some of them have some psychology background. And in my case, again, I had a little bit of both, where I had an MBA and I also minored in psychology. And so I was interested in both aspects of business and psychology. So it was a perfect blend in getting an industrial organizational psychology degree.
What is one of the most interesting aspects to your personal life with coming in with a psychology degree and an MBA? What has been the most interesting blending of the two for you personally?
Oh, good question. I would say applying it from an executive coaching standpoint, I've found that to be thrilling in terms of using my business background, but yet applying a lot of the interviewing and assessment techniques that I learned within my program to be able to help a client. So executive coaching, again, one of the major areas within industrial organizational psychology is helping business leaders become more effective, takes into account the leadership construct, looking at 360-degree feedback surveys. And so I ended up working shortly after graduate school as an executive coach for a client, and brought in a lot of those psychological principles while at the same time looking at his bottom line outcomes and what he needed from me to help him become more effective as a leader, to be able to communicate with his employees, to minimize turnover, which in the end helped him from a budgetary standpoint to be able to retain his staff, to be able to have less conflictual issues with his staff, things of that sort. So that was, to me, a perfect blend of using psychological principles while at the same time seeing the business aspects of what I was doing as an executive coach.
So it's looking at the business picture in the whole, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a holistic picture. And that's another distinction between an MBA and an MAIO. The MBA generally care about the bottom line. And really that's their whole purpose is to show profits or loss, depending on what we're doing, and obviously increase profits as much as we can. The MAIO sees that, but in addition to looks at the human element and realizing that human resources are our greatest asset, tries to improve upon that by, again, bringing in those psychological principles, studying those psychological principles to help improve the way we work.
Yeah, that's important, definitely. Where do you see the field of industrial organizational psychology within the next 10 to 15 years?
Great question. Well, for one thing, we talked about several things, but globalization is a big one. 10 years ago, they were predicting, with the baby boomers retiring, that we would have a war on talent. And sure enough, we're seeing that now, 10 years later, that there is a war on talent, where everyone is fighting for this valuable resource, human resource, continuing to do so at alarming rates, again, where we're seeing a lot of jobs opening up in terms of talent management. And so you will continue to see that. You will continue to see companies growing. You will continue to see mergers and acquisitions. You will continue to see companies, smaller companies, being bought out by larger ones. So that creates all sorts of issues. Globally, it creates various cultural conflicts. And so a cultural consultant or a diversity consultant will always have a job because of those issues in regards to globalization and talent and the need for talent and ensuring that people work together. I kind of foresee that as being the case. You will also see, again, with the baby boomers retiring, the ability to find people within organizations and keep them happy. So personal organization fit, that construct of ensuring that people and jobs go together, that congruency that's so critical, needs to be studied and continue to be advocated for within organizations. So no longer can the individual just sort of fit with the job. We really have to screen employees properly to ensure that they come into the job ready to go. In other words, they have the right competencies to be able to fulfill the job. And so that's where we as an industrial organizational psychologists come in to be able to help organizations find the right people for the right job by looking at specific things. And again, that's where selection scientists, which is another title that we use within our field, help with that person organization fit.
And hopefully there's going to be the other side of that coin for potential employees out there, is that they get trained about, again, how to do a proper resume, how to fill out job applications properly, how to answer those questions when they're being tested and being considered to being an employee, about how to answer those questions properly so that there's not yellow flags or red flags going off to the HR department before they even can step in the door and prove themselves. So it's very tricky nowadays.
Yeah, well said. And to that point, you're seeing a lot more employers screening their employees a lot more rigorously. You're seeing them use personality tests. You're seeing them use cognitive ability tests to ensure that the right PO fit, personal organization fit, is there. And again, an additional screening methodology to be able to do that, to hire the right people. And so it has become more scientific in the way we do things, and that's a good thing because studies have shown that the use of personality tests, the use of cognitive ability tests, is certainly able to predict performance and other outcome measures for a particular job. So it's no longer the general gut instinct or certain things that we feel good about. We feel good about this person, so let's just hire him. It's no longer done that way. It is very pinpointed in regards to specific selection tools that we use to be able to hire people for the job.
That's good from an organizational perspective, but from a personal perspective of, you know, again, the person just trying to get their foot in the door of trying to get their first or second jobs or whatever and trying to prove themselves, get into the job market, that might be, again, a little tricky and almost, it can be almost biased. Because some of those personality tests are not always conclusive as to whether or not the person's going to be a good employee or not.
That's very true, yes. No test is absolutely 100%, and that's the caveat that goes along with those things. The one thing I will tell my students is try to get as much experience within graduate school as you can, and which is why we have the Concise Consulting Center within the Chicago School. It's a consulting center to be able to give our students that experience. And essentially that consulting center is a consulting center within the school to go after consulting projects and have our students work on those particular projects. So by the time they're finished with graduate school, they would have worked on at least a couple projects. Most of them do work on a couple projects. One of my golden students, I like to say, she worked on 7 different projects. So by the time she was finished with graduate school, she had quite a stellar resume. So again, getting the most out of your graduate program to be able to market yourself, where they don't just rely on your personality or even any other screening measure they use, they're really looking at your experience, which in our world is still king. We still look at what you've done within a particular industry.
So Dr. Zoukalis, we're wrapping up. Do you have any words of wisdom for anybody who would like to pursue industrial organizational psychology in a few sentences?
Yeah, in a few sentences, quite simply, do your homework. I highly recommend that you go on the PSYOP.org website if you want to learn more about industrial organizational psychology. It's a wonderful field. I absolutely love it, and I talk about it ad nauseum. So do your homework and learn all about it, and I'm sure you'll be fascinated with what it has to offer and where psychology and work is going. It's quite fascinating.
It does sound like it. Thank you for letting us know more about industrial organizational
Absolutely.
Psychology. And would you like to leave your contact information?
Absolutely. I can be contacted at the Chicago School at msukal, M-S-U-K-A-L, at thechicagoschool.edu. And feel free to shoot me an email if you have questions about the program or if you want to learn more about industrial organizational psychology. I may be contacted.
Thank you so much, Dr. Melanie Zoukalis, for being my guest this evening and educating us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners. Join me every Monday night between 7 and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Psych 1-on-1. If you would like to contact me, my phone number is 562-234-4650. You can ask questions, make comments, for future shows would be great. And also, I do counseling work, so if you're interested, give me a call. My email address is jgood8@verizon.net. That's jgood8@verizon.net. Thank you so much for joining me. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. Bye now.